is it? Fritz Bergren, bloodandfaith.com, 9 October 2020. It is Election Day plus six, almost a week out. It is a Monday. Tomorrow it will be a week. So somebody asked me yesterday, Fritz, what do you think? What do you think about the elections? What's going on? What's your take? You know, how do you feel about it? And, you know, I have, of course, I have my personal opinions about who I wished could have won or did win or would have won. But I told this person, I find that less interesting. So what do I think about the election? And I told this person, I'm less concerned about who wins this term than the mood that the country is in, the mood that the country's been in, oh, at least for the last 12 years. I think there was a big change when Obama was elected. I think that was a sea shift. I thought it was an aberration, but he was reelected. And then we have another counter-reaction. Counter-revolutionaries came forward in 2016, and they elected Donald Trump. And now it's 4 years later, and the positions are as polarized as ever. So I'm not as concerned about who won the election, whether Donald Trump did or Joe Biden did or Kamala Harris did, or whether they cheated in Pennsylvania. What interests me more is that we are in a period of flux, a period of historical flux. And that won't change regardless of the outcome of the income. That's what fascinates me. That's what interests me. So we tend, Americans especially, being ahistorical, and I think that's unfortunately part of the plan of the entire educational establishment, is to strip us of history. And whatever history we have is now demonized. It used to be, you know, proud of your country, man. This is George Washington. This is Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, Robert E. Lee. Proud. But now everything's being demonized, and there's a full court press on to demonize the entire history of the United States. So it's rotten to the core. But in any case, we tend not to know the meaning and value of history, and we tend to judge things on whether or not we've achieved some social or moral goal. And I don't think that's healthy. I think in the long run that doesn't work, but that's where we are. And so instead of looking at have we achieved nirvana, have we achieved that place which doesn't even exist in American history, have we righted every wrong, have we arrived at a perfectly just and tolerant, and I look at, okay, what are the characteristics of this transition, and where are we going to end up? And that's what interests me more. After World War II, when Great Britain gave up its colony of India, what the Indians found out is not everybody was an Indian. You had the Hindus and you had the Muslims, and they went into warfare mode, and they split the country into two, India and Pakistan, and then later into three, India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. And it became apparent that we all aren't just one, we all can't get along. In the late 1700s, Englishmen, English colonies, I mean, these are people that are very similar, white Christian European men and women, and the English colonists, the settlers in North America said, what do we have to do with the King of England? What do we have to do with the Parliament? We're going to go our own way. So they declared independence and went their own way, and a big war was fought, and they achieved independence. And, of course, later the British Crown learned from that, and as their other colonies, especially New Zealand and Australia and Canada, started agitating for independence, they said, you know what, let's give them independence. Let's let them go their own way. Let's keep them in the family, but let them go their own way. And that's completely natural. That's completely normal. That is a healthy thing. And that was with people that actually were very similar, white Northern European Christian peoples. In 1860, there was a civil war in the United States, and that was, again, white European Christian peoples. Yet they couldn't get along. And the southern state says, you know what, we need to go our own way. We need to go our own way. We have a different understanding of how we should order ourselves. And we don't like the fact that the Yankee is imposing their economics on us, which was certainly a big key to the Civil War. It wasn't just, you know, the poor black slave guy. That was far down on the list of priorities as far as the immediacy of the war in 1860s. And they said, we're going to go our own way. We want to have we want to grow cotton. We want to do our slave thing. And, it was been nice. Nice knowing you. See you later. And we're going to go our own way. And Lincoln took issue with that. And he decided that through force of arms, he would force them to submit to his rule. And the United States became, very much a centralized, large country. An empire, in a sense, on the North American hemisphere. You've got North Korea and South Korea. You've got Taiwan separating from China, and on and on and on. You've got Scottish independence movements. You've got the independence movements in Spain, Catalonia. You've got the Flemish agitating for independence from Belgium. And this is a normal thing. You've got the Russians have a problem in Chechnya, where the Chechens want to be their own country, their own nations, and Russia says, no, you've been Russian for forever. And so I look at this as a period of moving in that direction. There's no such thing as a static history. History ebbs and flows. There's kingdoms rise, kingdoms fall, countries rise, countries fall. And I look at this election more in terms of that. It's a blip on the radar. As we look out at the ocean over time. And what's fascinating to me is less whether or not candidate A or B gets the votes, but what does that portend for the future? So what does this mean? What does this all mean as far as this election? Certainly an indeterminate election, but this is not an election between a conservative Democrat and a moderate Republican. This is, truly a deep split between left and right. There's fundamental worldview differences. This is vastly bigger than the differences between the North and the South in 1860. It's vastly different, bigger than the differences between the English colonists and the British Crown in 1776. This is as big as the differences between the Hindus and the Muslims in India in the late 1940s. We hate each other. you've heard me talk about Marxist revolutions before, atheistic revolutions. We remember the French Revolution, where it wasn't enough for the revolutionists in Paris to say, okay, we got what we wanted. We've converted Notre Dame into the Temple of Reason, and we've ousted the king. No, it's not enough for that. We need to go into the countryside and put pitchforks into French Catholics. And it was the same in the Russian Revolution. It wasn't enough for Lenin to have taken over the shipyards in St. Petersburg and captured the government in Moscow and murdered the Tsar and his family. No, he had to go into the countryside and find good Christian Russian peasants and kill them, murder them by the millions. And unfortunately, I think this is a possibility in this country. Certainly, the left has been calling for lists to be made and people to be held accountable. At the very least, that these people can never serve in the government again, not as a teacher, not as a corporate executive, not as an elected politician, not as even as a government bureaucrat. That's being called for now, and the demonization has been complete. We are the Hitlers and the Nazis. So I don't know how this ends well. I don't. That's the bigger. That's the bigger arc. It's not whether A or B gets elected. It's the bigger arc of the internal hatred, the internal division. And it's completely natural in the course of history. I don't think the whole Marxist atheism revolution is. I think that's a real cancer. But it is natural for peoples to go to war and to separate. And if you look at a map of the United States, North America, over the last 400 years, you'll see how it's changed. You'll see how it's changed, and I think that's a potential in the future. So what does the Christian do? Well, Christian needs to be right with God, and he needs to understand that this, God will work through this. I think that the most important thing is people have a wake-up call. Christians need a fundamental wake-up call. They've been dead. They've been asleep, and they've been dead. And I think they're waking up, and I think they're making choices. They're going to go to the right, or they're going to go to the left. And that's, a great analogy. The happy middle is not there anymore. If you're going to stay in the happy middle, you're default to the left, because that's where they want Christians. That's where they've always wanted Christians. They want them to be asleep, dead, gone. They want to have a happy club on Sunday mornings where you go and you have a singing club, and then a man talks about something that has no meaning or bearing in life in this world. And the left loves that. That's the perfect Christian church right there. And then if they can do one better, the church becomes woke and they become social justice warriors. And that's where they've been. Not so me, not so many of us. Jesus Christ is Lord. He's Lord of every nation. He's Lord of every bloodline on the face of the earth. And he has a morality. It's called the Ten Commandments. He has a patriarchy. The Father is the leader. There's things worth fighting for. There's things worth dying for. You cannot raise a family in a non-Christian country without risking your family abandoning the faith. And I've talked to one too many parent who said, I don't understand it. I raised little Johnny to be a good little Christian boy, and he grows up and he goes the way of the world. Well, what do you expect? He's been evangelized 24/7 by the whole culture. It's the same thing that the pilgrims faced, the same thing the pilgrims faced in the when they had to leave England in the 1600s. They left England, they went to Amsterdam and said, oh my God, I don't understand it. You know, you raise your teenagers in Amsterdam, and they act like Amsterdamian teenagers. And so they said, we need a Christian culture, we need a Christian nation. And so they went to North America to build a Christian nation. And eventually that's what it comes down to. Enough of this stuff. Enough of this trying to compromise. We've compromised ourselves into Sodom and Gomorrah. We've compromised ourselves into sending our kids to public schools where they're taught that Stevie has two dads and Susie has two mommies. And you go to look at the, you know, it used to be Bible clubs in junior high and high school. Now you go, you get the LGBTQ clubs with the blue-haired teacher. And she's teaching these kids that child molestation is okay, teaching them that to have relations with the same. I can't talk about that stuff. I don't like talking about that stuff. But it's wrong. It's wrong. And we've been so accepting and so tolerant as Christians because we've become Judeo-Christians instead of standing up and fighting for what is right and true and good. When you don't fight, you abandon the future generations. That's the problem. You may have your little time with Jesus, and oh, it's so good that you have your time with Jesus, but if you don't fight for the culture, you don't fight for the nation, the succeeding generations, your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren will never know the gospel of Jesus Christ. Don't you understand that it will be illegal? Don't you understand it's already illegal? Don't you understand how many websites have been banned and Twitter? It's gone. It's illegal. You think you can stand in a school classroom and preach the gospel of Jesus Christ? It used to be that way. That used to be completely legal. They used to have the Ten Commandments on the walls of all the public schools. You can't do that anymore. How are you going to get the succeeding generations to know the gospel of Jesus Christ? How's that going to happen when everything's illegal? No, you have your little private singing club. Go to your little song club on Sunday morning with all the doors shut so nobody can hear you. You don't offend anybody out there. You don't offend the atheists or the Muslims. Keep your door shut. Have your singing club. And the pastor can say a few words about how the devil's taken over. And go home now and say prayer before dinner. Yeah. Okay. Fritz Berger and bloodandfaith.com. 9 November 2020. I'm not giving up, man. I'm just starting. See ya.